Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. After being diagnosed with stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer at only 55 years old, Terry Conran just wanted to know what was driving her lung cancer. After 3 years and 2 doctors, Terry finally learned that she had the KRAS biomarker. Eager to find a support group for people with the same biomarker, she looked online, only to realize that none existed. So in January 2020, she decided to create one herself and founded KRAS Kickers, a nonprofit for people with the KRAS gene, with a goal of connecting patients to research about the topic. In today's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, the now 61-year-old shares what it was like to create an advocacy group in the beginning of a global pandemic, what the recent FDA approval of KRAZATI means for patients with lung cancer, the importance of biomarker testing, lessons she has learned from her experiences with cancer, and more.
How did you get diagnosed with cancer?
This time of the year, you know, everybody gets colds, right? You have asthma, you have allergies, like, right? I've always had them my whole life. We'd spent a lot of time at the beach that summer. And so I just kind of thought I just had too much beach time, too much humidity, and had been back and forth to the doctor a couple of times. And the doctor put me on an inhaler and, you know, said, okay, well, he's give you some time to work and then come back if it doesn't work. Well, one thing led to another after I'd been back and forth to the doctor a couple times over, probably intermittently over about 2 years. And then by the summer of 2016, I was like really kind of like really wearing me down, you know. Now I know they call it fatigue, but at the time I just thought, you know, we were doing too much stuff and you know, whatever. And so in the fall, my whole life, I've always had allergies and stuff. And I had what I thought were allergies that turned into a cold by like Thanksgiving, Christmas time. And so 2 days before Christmas in 2016, I went to the doctor fully expecting to just kind of get handed antibiotics and sent them my merry way. And she could hear fluid in my lungs. That fluid was pneumonia. And that's what saved my life, is because I felt bad enough with husband prompting, right? I felt bad enough that I needed to go to the doctor. And that fluid, when she went in and gave me a chest x-ray, she could see it highlighted a tumor in my lung. That's not a good way to get diagnosed with lung cancer. It's usually a chest x-ray is not a good way to see anything. But she took me back and showed me, and you could see in there was something that didn't belong. I didn't want to ruin the kids' Christmas. I didn't want to ruin everybody's, right? And so it's like, I kind of like just internalized it. I had pneumonia, went home with my antibiotics, and the doctor's like really clear, come back after the first of the year. I've not been diagnosed with lung cancer. It's just something we see that doesn't look right. And I need to get followed up on after the first year. So after the first year, went back and fast tracked through pulmonology, CT scans, PET scans, and whatever. That ended up being end of January. I went in for a biopsy, and the biopsy was non-small cell lung cancer. That non-small lung cancer we made a plan. The doctors made a plan after I was in the hospital for the weekend, for a pleural effusion, because they thought it was stage 4. And because they thought it was stage 4, it had metastasized. There was a lot of fluid in my lungs. I went in and they had to drain off almost 2 liters of fluid. It's like a liter and a half. And they said, instead, we're going to start you on chemo. And I went on 3 rounds of chemo. And because I responded well to that, they were able to remove only one lobe of my lung. And I did a follow-up round of chemo. So by the 1st of July of 2017, I was just going to be monitored for 3 months, and I had what they viewed. You have no active disease. You have no evidence of disease. We're going to monitor you, and you're going to move forward. And after seeing doctor's appointment, being in the hospital, watching my kid graduate, working through chemo, working through all these things, it's like they drop you. And you're like, okay, what do I do with my life now? You're like, okay. They're like, okay, well, we'll see you in 3 months. So, okay, well, I have no sense of normal. I haven't lost my hair. My chemo didn't make me lose my hair. My schedule has suddenly opened up. Now I'm not at doctor's appointments 3-4 days a week and trying to recover from whatever treatment I was going through. And I wanted to get some control over my life. So I found a cancer exercise class, joined the class, and there was mostly breast cancer patients in there. And it was like, I realized from talking to them, great information, but I felt distanced because it was breast cancer. It's, you know, different body part, right? So, okay. So I did some looking around. I started doing exercising, started really feeling a little bit more in control of my life, went out and found a lung cancer support group in late 2017 locally. It was an in-person meeting back when we used to do those all the time. And I went to that and started going regularly to a monthly meeting and hearing about these biomarkers, hearing other people and seeing and feeling connected with other patients. So it's like, okay, well, that felt good. And I started hearing about these biomarkers and seeing that when you went in, people would kind of like, you know, cut together. They would have like a little bit of a click around these different biomarkers, these EGFR people and the AOK people and what have you, because they have the same treatments. Okay. So I'm asking my doctor, well, hey, what am I? Well, you don't have a biomarker. I don't have a biomarker. Nope. I go again, back to my doctor. I go back to the doctor. I get my first recurrence. And I'm like, well, at least I'm going to be able to find out what's driving this cancer. So, okay. I have it. They were able to do an ablation. They sent it out for testing. I'm like, what am I? Nothing. Okay. She didn't say I'm nothing, but I don't have any biomarkers. Okay, great. Another recurrence later that year, and I go through an ablation, radiation, back to no evidence of disease. And I'm coming up on my 3-year cancerversary, and it's like, okay, I'm in a good place. I have no evidence of disease. I'm on this board with this lung cancer support group through Live Lung, and I'm connecting with them, and I'm like, okay, great. Well, it's time for me to get a second opinion. Now I've learned that second opinions are not going to alienate your doctor, that it's actually empowering and it's okay to go and get a second opinion. So I go out for a second opinion, and I'm thinking I'm not going to learn too terribly much other than maybe next treatments if something comes up. And I walk in, and the doctor's like, well, you have this KRAS biomarker. And I'm like, what? So I have a KRAS. Where did this come from? Did you guys do nukes? She's like, no, it was on your first report, and it was on your second report. Your doctor wasn't telling you the information because it doesn't change your treatment. It didn't change my treatment, but it changed everything for me because it was my identity. And I went home that night, and I'm thinking, there's got to be a group, right? I mean, all I know is it's common, and there's other people out there. And so I'm fully expecting to go out, join a group, hit a committee, and whatever, and then that was it. There wasn't a group. And so I'm laying in bed, and I'm thinking, what is it I want? I want to share a voice. I want to be able to connect. And so I reached out to the organizations, the longevities and go-tos and whatever, and said, you know, hey, I'm looking for people to connect with. They got me in touch with a couple of people. And I was trying to understand what it meant. And so the first of the year, first of 2020, we went online with a Facebook group, just connecting people and getting information, and then COVID happened. And so the KRAS kickers really technically, you know, I mean, it did start, I started it in my mind, right, in December 2019, but it really didn't go online until January 2020 as COVID was happening. And because I had already done the groundwork with the lung cancer groups, I knew the organizations and I knew of them, right? And so I was able to go to targeted therapies that year. I went on toward the lab at Amgen. I became a speaker. This was just by February of 2020, so like quick in 2 months. I was part of Lung Cancer Research, Lung Cancer Foundation of America. One of their speakers bureau did videos with them and started learning about it. And since COVID happened, I was able to walk into meetings that otherwise I never would have been able to get to or be invited to. And COVID was the best thing that ever could have happened because I could zoom into a meeting that was nothing but pathologists or lung cancer doctors or what have you and listen in and hear what was going on and understand the science. And That's what I did. And in the meantime, we kept bringing the information in and trying to understand what is a RAS and what does that look like. And subsequently, I've been able to understand what that means and what that looks for. So we use KRAS not just as a biomarker. Because COVID happened, we went global right away and connected around with people. And the, excuse me. And even though we went global, it's like, okay, well, I started seeing that since RAS is so common and they have this thing called the RAS initiative under NCI, it's like, well, why is this broken out by lung cancer or whatever? It's like, it should just be all RAS. And so we're all RAS to all people. And so we're tumor agnostic. So we are, and I'll give my little example here. So we're the KRAS kickers. And the KRAS kickers, okay, the KRAS is the most common oncogene. Okay, in the three deadliest cancers, the top three deadliest cancers, white, which is lung, blue, which is colorectal, purple, which is pancreatic, and gray, which is brain, is where this all goes to. We work together to kick cancer's KRAS, okay? And so we use this. The KRAS is not just like KRAS kickers, but we use KRAS as an acronym for KRAS knowledge, research, advocacy for survivorship. And we connect all those pieces together in whatever way it takes, bringing the science to the survivors so the four better survivorship.
So you mentioned Krazati, and so I would love to know more about what you've, as a patient with lung cancer, how do you feel like this is going to impact patients? How have you seen, in your community, how have people been reacting? Have people made plans to already go on it? Or just, I would love to know your perspective on all that.
No, just for disclosure, I'm not a KRAS G12C patient, okay? Oh. I have a different type of KRAS, and so I don't qualify for this drug. What does Krazati mean? Krazati means that they're closer to better, okay? Everybody wants to get, it was fantastic that we got the first approval over a year ago. It's been a year and a half now. But the second approval means that they're not done improving it, okay? That is the excitement of the hope, right? It's different. It may work for me that there's an indication that actually it's just powerful that the hope is just overwhelming. Really? It really is. There's a reason that we're not walking around with our iPhone 1s. Okay. Those are long gone. In fact, you couldn't even update your OS if you needed to. Right. And so this means it's better. It doesn't mean it's cured. It means we're better. Okay. If it took 40 years to get here, and it's 40 years now, right? So if it took 40 years to get here and just get two approvals, second line approvals, okay, we're not done yet, but we're getting better and we're getting there.
Okay. Will you feel like it's a step in the right direction?
Oh my gosh. It's a step in, it's a big step in the right direction. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to go to the grocery store and see a choice of only one bread.
That's a good point.
Okay. How many different kinds of bread are there? Okay. Competition is good for the market on everybody's level. Mm-hmm. And by market, yes, financial, you can tell the financial background, right? But also you're talking about as a patient. Okay. It's scary if there's only one thing, mm-hmm. right? If I only have one thing, that's it. That's all my hope wrapped into one thing. Mm-hmm. If I have options, take a breath.
What advice would you have for patients who are feeling the way you did when you were diagnosed with lung cancer and you felt, okay, I have lung cancer, but I don't know what my identity is. I don't have a clique, like you said, or group to belong to. I'm sure there are other patients with other types of cancers or lung cancer who are feeling that way. What would be your advice for them?
The way to find your people is to know what that biomarker is. The way to find out the best research and what's going to work for you is to know what that biomarker is. It all boils down to that one thing. Doctors need to do the testing. I can't pick if they do or don't do it, but I didn't know enough to ask for a report because this is not the type of report that just shows up in your portal. Okay. You have to ask for the report. Okay. And I want to see the whole report because it's leading towards personalized medicine and precision medicine, which means everybody's recipe is a little bit different. You need to see the whole recipe, right, of who I am to see what's going on to get that identity.
Do you feel like there's anything else that you want to share about your journey?
You know, the thing is that I don't think in general the researchers and the doctors and whatever realize how much hope we get from that. And I don't just mean the support group part of it, like looking at the other people, because it's that information, right, that we're bringing in. And that hope is coming from the research. The hope is coming from the doctors. That hope is coming from it, right? Because as a patient, you're laying there. And your job is to get through treatment, okay? And I can tell you, when I'm going through chemo or radiation, and I've been through both, I'm not like this animated, okay? And the people around me are worrying to make sure I'm eating, and they're looking things up and whatever when you're going through that treatment. This allows that support system, that network, the place to have an empowerment, okay? We specifically at K-Risk Acres only bring in research stuff. At the same time, we allow people to ask questions about, like, non-traditional sorts of things, okay? So we can have, so there is a place. It's like, it's not like, you know, if not eating sugar is going to prevent cancer, well, guess what? I already have cancer. I think it's too late for me to not eat sugar. Okay. Do what you want next, but it's too late for me to prevent it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Good point.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I think that's part of it. So there's hope in that empowerment. And we need to be more patient inclusive, not just patient centric, where we're going around the patient. Allow us to be included in it in an informed manner. And that involves our individual networks.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter @cure_today, Facebook @Cure Magazine, or Instagram @curetoday.